And I'm Jeff Prescott.
And this is No Quarter, blah, 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 arcade games. How are you, Jeff?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Things are finally starting to cool off here a little bit. Got some rain, some sleet, some cold today. How about you?
Inverse. We had a little rain, but we're starting to warm back up, and we're supposed to be 80 degrees tomorrow.
Oh, well, lucky you.
We traded.
I guess so.
It's weird. Doesn't feel lucky when you wake up and it's light outside, but it's dark at 5 p.m. So,
It's a little strange, yeah.
yeah.
That stupid jump that you get with daylight savings time.
Yeah, and we were doing a little reading because we could have sworn that daylight saving time is erratic, and it's actually being extended out further and further every year. It used to occur, earlier in October, and now it's, first week in November. And eventually, I think in the next 2 or 3 years, I think there's talk of eradicating it altogether and just going back on standard time and leaving it alone.
Well, that'd be nice. I think originally it had something to do with like farming, and then when that became less of a concern, it sort of became about saving energy. And I mean, come on, guys, really, who cares? An hour here, an hour there is not going to matter.
Seriously, and I think if you run the metrics, it ends up costing more money than it ever could from a conservationist standpoint, save money. So it's a relic, it's arcane, and
I know it wastes a lot of my energy having to get up and change the clocks once, twice a year. So
that's correct. That's correct. I
I'd rather
agree.
be playing arcade games, and instead I have to get up and set these stupid clocks all over the place.
Yeah, these old arcade games don't care what time it is. It's always game time.
That's right. And speaking of that, it's a Novector, and I realize that we started about a week late because Carnival will be posting here shortly, and that's like we're 4 days into November. But we'll just extend it on into December a week or so. I don't think anyone will complain, and we'll have I think I have an idea for a contest that I'll talk more about at the end of the show. So yes, you'll have to listen to us babble on to hear if you want to enter and maybe win something. But let's talk about this week's game, Jeff. What is it?
All fans of Vector Games, we're here to ameliorate your suffering and discuss Asteroids.
Yeah, the 1979 classic from Atari Incorporated, if I remember correctly, if my notes are correct.
Yeah, they were Inc. back then. The awful Atari was Atari Corp. That's the awful Atari.
Now there still is an Atari, but I don't know how much that has to do with the original Atari anymore. I think the name's been bought and sold a few times, and people have been fired and traded around, and I think it's mostly just an intellectual property and a trademark these days.
Right, for patent trolls, and little else.
Yeah, infogrames.
They've really wrecked our nostalgia, or they've really certainly tried to. But this week, Atari made it all better.
Yeah, so I guess the thing that always concerns me about talking about one of the top 10 games, the top 10 popularity games, like Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Galaga, and this one, Asteroids, Space Invaders, and a couple of others, is there's so much to talk about. B, we're going to miss a lot of it. C, we're going to get a lot of it wrong. And D, we're going to get a lot of letters correcting us on all of that.
And EKMA, just deal with it.
Yeah, we'll try to cover this as best we can, but honestly, this is mostly going to be about our play experience and how much we enjoyed it. And if we get some of the facts and the history wrong, well, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, there will be something for somebody to gripe about, but hopefully there'll be something for some folks to celebrate about, and maybe we can inspire some folks to fire up these little white lines.
Well, there you go. That's a good way to think of it. Asteroids, the object, of course, is to destroy asteroids and saucers. Reading from Wikipedia here. The player controls a triangular ship that rotates left and right, fires shots straight forward at a time on the screen at any given time, and thrusts forward. The bane of my play existence when it comes to asteroids, the thrust management, the inertia. Once the ship begins moving in any direction, it will continue in that direction for a time without intervention unless the player applies thrust in a different direction. The ship eventually will drift to a halt when not thrusting. The player can also send the ship into hyperspace, causing it to disappear and reappear in a random location on the screen at the risk of self-destructing or appearing on top of an asteroid. Now, that's kind of the dry, boring, dull version of it. Jeff, can you make that more interesting?
I'll try.
Okay.
Two key points, though. When you engage in hyperspace, I believe there's a 1 in 5 chance that you'll automatically explode regardless of if you rematerialize on top of a target or an asteroid or UFO or not. There's a 20% chance hidden in there that you'll just blow up on reentry. And I experimented a little with this, and I can confirm that it's about a 1 in 5.
Great.
In terms of, you know, sliding around all over the screen and playing with the physics and enjoying the inertia, I don't think there's ever been another game before or since that's given you such freedom of range of motion. The fluidity is really, it never gets old, and it's the most exciting part of the game. I mean, you can move in basically a 360 degree field and wrap around every side of the screen, and nothing's off limits.
Yes, you have the freedom to fly off to the right and reappear on the left, right into an asteroid.
Right. It's a debris field out there, so I mean, you have to be cautious. But for young children and thinking back to when I first was exposed to this game, and this is one of the early experiences of a physics control, and you know, the closest to driving or flying an automobile or a plane, and it was pretty exhilarating, and it's still a lot of fun. I think the most fun aspect of the game still is the flight control. It's not really been equaled in another arcade game, not from this era.
So it sounds like you like that mechanic.
I love it, yeah. Important to know, too, when firing, you can fire a maximum of 4 bullets simultaneously in a salvo, and then those bullets either need to hit a target or disappear. And bullets don't fly all the way across the screen, about, I don't know, 3/4 or so, and then they kind of disappear. So you are vulnerable for a time. If you're pretty trigger happy, it can lead to disaster.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you here, Jeff, because I do not like the having to deal with the thrust mechanics. It's the reason I don't like Defender. And for games like Lunar Lander, where the point is to manage your thrust, and land, you know, in a specific place based on your arc and inertia and things like that, it's great. When it's interfering with me trying to shoot asteroids and blow up saucers, and it bugs me.
So you just hang out in the center of the screen?
Like, I usually do. Yeah, pretty much. I move as little as possible, and only when I absolutely have to, because I so quickly get caught up in trying to manage the drift and the direction and things like that, that I either drift right into an asteroid or end up, you know, getting shot by the saucer. I don't like that mechanic at all.
Well, the game kind of forces you to have to adopt the ability to fly the ship, though. I mean, every rock you hit, if you notice that, you know, the large boulder gets shot, it splits into two, and sure, and those rocks fly slightly faster. And those medium-sized rocks, when shot, morph into small asteroids, another pair per. And they can fly extremely quick. And once you have 30 or 40 of those things floating around, they're all going to intersect at every point on the screen. And you then throw in the randomization of the UFOs and whatnot, and you have no other choice but to learn how to cruise around. And I think that's that learning that mechanic, as frustrating as it is the key to really enjoying the game, you know, approaching like six-figure territory and to play it for a while and get a real, you know, satisfaction from it, especially with that second UFO, that little jerk that has extremely good aim.
we should point out that, you know, since we're talking about splitting asteroids and the UFOs and things like that, that there are three different sizes of asteroids, and shooting the large one will get you will net you 20 points. Shooting the medium-sized one will get you 50 points, and the small one will get you 100. And, of course, as you shoot the large one, it splits into two medium-sized, and then that one splits into small ones. So you actually, each large asteroid, there's a bunch of points contained within them if you end up shooting them. The large UFO is 200 points, and the small UFO is 1,000 points. And he's 1,000 points because it moves a lot faster and is a whole lot better at shooting than the large one.
Yeah, it's definitely got some AI working on it where it can predict pretty much where your ship is. And I think it keys in on that XY coordinate and sends bullets that direction. So if you're not moving and playing defensively, you'll get a bullet in the tailpipe in a hurry.
Yeah, and I should say that me complaining about the thrust mechanic and not enjoying it in no way is a commentary on the quality of this game. It's an excellent game. It's well-programmed. It's smooth. I see a lot of people having fun. I don't enjoy this game because I suck at it, and I don't seem to get any better because of that thrust mechanic. And part of it, I think, is that this is all buttons. There's no joystick. There's no spinner. You press one button to spin left, press another to spin right, another to thrust, another to shoot, another for hyperspace, another to make your coffee, another to fetch your shoes, et cetera, et cetera. And normally I'm used to, you know, I push the joystick left, the ship flies to the left. I push it right, the ship flies to the right. And I don't have that here. And that's, it's irritating. And it's as irritating that I can't get any better than that it is a problem for me in the first place.
Yeah, this is one element of Asteroids that harkens back to clearly one of its forefathers and no doubt an inspiration of Space Invaders, where they've borrowed the controls of everything's a button. And instead of sliding right and left, you can rotate in a circle, and adding thrust allows you to go anywhere in the playfield.
I typically try, my strategy was typically to do what I saw some of the experts do on YouTube and video and other places where you clear the field except for one asteroid and just try to shoot the UFOs and get your points that way.
Oh, lurking?
Yes, and that way you don't have to advance to the next screens where there are many, many more asteroids and they get a whole lot faster. I wasn't very good at that.
Right. I've attempted to replicate that as well, and it never works out for whatever reason. These UFOs, in fairness to the mechanics of the game, the UFOs are vulnerable to the rocks too. And whatever they fly into, that'll destroy them just as quickly as it'll destroy you. Now, the UFOs are shooting, and their bullets, when striking asteroids, break them up into rocks as well. So they're kind of a chaos engine in themselves in like two dimensions. Like, they're hunting you, but they're also making the playfield and the environment more dangerous by adding more fast-moving rocks. They should be eliminated as soon as possible, really.
I never got good enough at the game in the past or this week again. I didn't get good enough to form any kind of strategy other than trying to ape the clear the screen except for one, just because I would thrust and shoot, and then suddenly I'm thrusting out of control and spinning and trying to turn around and flying into stuff, and it's just not fun for me.
Now, Mike, what you need to do, and the key to it...
Never play it again, yes, I know.
Okay. the genius to it is to be able to rotate and stop your ship in the exact opposite position that you're thrusting in, and then thrust in reverse to, you know, brake, and eventually... Once you get adroit at that, you can pinpoint yourself in a spot, turn around, brake, stop, and kind of command different quadrants of the screen. I like to play it in thinking of the screen as four places, you know, northeast, southwest, southeast, northeast, etc. And I'll try and put my ship in a quadrant opposite of where the largest population of rocks happens to be, and eventually that breaks down, but for me, it works.
Oh, goodness, that's so far beyond what I can do with this game.
Did you ever play piano or keyboard or anything?
Nope.
I wonder, and I hypothesize, if maybe folks that played piano where they were using their left hand for, you know, chord or rhythm, might be more adept at, you know, hitting the left and right, because my left hand pretty much controls the rotation, and then I do everything else with the right. I've seen some people cross their hands and do the rotate, like, do the rotation with their right hand.
Okay.
Which is real peculiar, but I to each their own.
I guess so. To me, this game is as frustrating as a fighter with, 16 buttons and 48 combinations in each direction on an 8-way joystick. So,
I don't know. I'm trying to hide my fanboyism for it, I guess. But
don't hide your fanboyism. Enjoy it, please. Right. Do.
I'm gonna revel. It's elegant. It's beautiful. It's like a 57 DeSoto or a Les Paul Gibson. It is freaking awesome.
I think we found your favorite game.
Maybe. It's a top fiver for sure. What do you know about the history of this game? Like,
well, I know that it was conceived by Lyle Rains. It was programmed by Ed Logg. Obviously, there were other Atari staff collaborating there. I know that Rains, I guess, wanted this to be a raster graphics game, but they found that it was a better experience with the XY monitor because you could be much more precise with flight and with shooting. What else should I know?
From what I can research, I've comprised a few notes. Asteroids was originally called Cosmos, and the initial design was a reimagining of the Cinematronics Space Wars cabinet. The asteroids were originally drawn statically as elements in the background of a playfield like wallpaper, and they were purely for visual effect. Cosmos, while it was in development, Lyle Rains, a fellow Atari engineer, had gently suggested to the rest of the team, Ed Logg and Howie Delman, Paul Mancuso, I think is another name that was involved in the early development. Lyle's suggestion was that the rocks should float and move and be animated. The mechanics of Cosmos at that time were simply, a space shooter where a player could, I think it was a two-player game at the same time, just like Space Wars, where players were preoccupied with blowing each other up and blowing up planets by floating their ship into them and making contact with them to destroy them. After Lyle's suggestion to animate the rocks, the planets went away and the rocks sort of began to dominate, and everyone got massively addicted to this game. Once the free-floating rocks in space and the physics was worked out, I understand that Ed Logg had to beat people off of the station and in the lab because it was destroying his ability to work, because folks like, Owen Rubin and whatnot were on his station all the time. It looks like Ed even programmed a subroutine there, because Owen would go in at night after Ed had left and play Asteroids, was pretty addicted to it from what I'd read, and fill up the high score table. And Ed would come in and see all of his initials wasted and Owen's dominating his game, which this annoyed Ed quite a bit. So he wrote a subroutine that checked for all the possible permutations of Owen's initials and simply would replace them with Ed Logg's initials. Owen had left a little memo out for Ed saying that he thought there was a bug in the game, and Ed's like, nope, it's working. Originally, they conceived this whole thing on a raster monitor, but like you said, quickly they adopted the XY Quadrascan development unit, which Atari engineered and conceived at the Grass Valley Research and Development Facility. And apparently Howard Delman was very familiar with that monitor because he had done a lot of yeoman's work on Lunar Lander. And once Ed saw the razor sharp resolution and the high contrast of this monitor, he fell in love with it too. And they both agreed that Asteroids would be Vector.
Yeah. It looks like that Grass Valley facility was known as Cyan Engineering, which I guess is an Atari property. And the board Delman modified, the Lunar Lander boards, actually, for the Asteroid prototypes, Asteroids prototypes. The new boards came with modified for 5 buttons, 13 sound effects, and additional RAM. I find it fascinating that this game only uses 13 sound effects, because it sure feels like a whole lot more when you're playing it.
That's true. And these are all discrete noises that are not coded in software. They're all from capacitors and resistors and circuitry.
Each gets its own circuit.
Right. And have you seen the photo of that prototype board with the daughter card like hanging off of it with all the wire wrap?
Yep.
And all that stuff has been condensed and into the Asteroids board, and that explains why it's so crowded with micas and resistors networks and whatnot. But yeah, all that racket, and that deep, incredible bass that is persistent with the heartbeat noise and the little pew 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 shots, and I guess the UFO noise is the same weird oscillating trill, just in a different register, for a higher register for the more obnoxious and more deadly one. I think they're the exact same noise, just in different octaves. Let's see. I had another note about Ed Logg, the practical joker, during the creation of Asteroids, before it was loosed upon the world. It's purported that Ed installed a secret kill switch that he could utilize at any time while he was playing with other players in the lab. He could just randomly destroy their ship on cue.
Sounds like a more elegant version of the Carrington solution that I implemented during our Galaga play.
Pretty much. It's very insidious. Apparently Ed was quite imaginative fellow. Did you hear about the Turtleroids?
No.
It's an aside to Asteroids, but apparently Atari, at Cyan, they would have brainstorming sessions where they just go out to the Grass Valley Mountains and probably hit the bong a few times and throw out, high-minded concepts for what they thought would be appealing video games. And to my understanding, there was a small abstract of a game that was constantly rehashed over and over and over again, involving turtles, similar to Stern's Turtles, like a maze-type game with these cute critters wandering through it. And it was always shot down by development. And eventually a memo was circulated: no more turtles. Don't even bring it up. That's it. So Ed, in classic Ed Logg fashion, there's a anniversary like golden Asteroids cabinet that sat in one of the Atari facilities at one of the corporate offices in Sunnyvale.
Wow.
Which is a gold edition arcade cab to celebrate the 50,000th upright machine that was produced. I've got a picture of it. We'll definitely have to add it to the website or Facebook it out. But the machine's available for all staff and management, etc., whoever wants to play it and gain a little inspiration on lunch or blow off work for the afternoon. Atari must have been a wonderfully dangerous place to work for a lot of reasons. I could see my productivity going straight into the toilet. So Ed took the board home one night and changed the UFO code and had the machine draw turtles, which flew by and spat bullets at you, and retreated in and out of their shells, and you had to destroy them. And Turtleroids was born, and I think the people who circulated the memo were probably in mute agony when they saw that.
Let's see, a little bit of trivia here. So we were talking about the lurking, and apparently that came from originally the saucer, when it appeared, the first thing it would do was take a shot, but the action was altered, so there was a delay before the saucer shoots, which is what leads to the lurking, because, and this is what I was never able to successfully do, but I guess if enough practice, you can get really good at it. So what you can, since the saucer can only shoot directly at the player's position on the screen, the player can hide at the opposite end of the screen and shoot across the screen boundary and remain relatively safe. And there were, I guess, a lot of complaints from operators losing money because of players who figured this out. So there was a creation of a special EEPROM that could restrict your chances to do this, and which I didn't see any restriction, but well, maybe that's what was going on. And I'm just so bad at this, I couldn't figure it out.
You and me both. The restriction is the limitation of my own meager skills.
apparently, the saucers were nicknamed Mr. Bill and Sluggo, and this was referred to in an Esquire article and led to Ed Logg receiving a cease and desist letter from an SNL lawyer who owned the Mr. Bill trademark at the time.
Did you find the letter?
No, I did not.
I've got a copy of it. You want me to read it?
Sure, yeah.
This is dated January 19th of 81, addressed to Mr. Edward Logg at Atari headquarters. Dear Mr. Logg, I was quite interested in reading the article entitled How to Win at Asteroids in the February 81 Esquire. As the attorney for Walter Williams and Real Good Productions Incorporated, proprietors and all rights in the Mr. Bill Show and related characters, I am always interested in the public mentions of our names. However, please be aware that the name Mr. Bill and Sluggo are protected by U.S. trademark and copyright laws and various state and local laws. I am sure the personalities associated with these names are helpful in conceptualizing the behavior of elements of the Asteroids game. However, kindly refrain from utilizing these names in any phase of the manufacture, use, or sale of Asteroids. Yours truly, Thomas M. Sanders, Esquire.
Lawyers ruin everything.
They do. They just suck all the fun out of it. And Sluggo, is that not absolutely the most perfect name for that strike-throwing mutant small ship, which is...
Oh, absolutely.
It's the Deathbringer. It really is. Stupid lawyers.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. Asteroids was, of course, immediately successful. It knocked Space Invaders out of the number one popularity slot in the United States in the arcades. Over time, it became Atari's best-selling arcade game ever. They sold a total of 70,000 units. It earned an estimated $150 million in sales from the game. Operators earned $500 million on top of that just with coin drops. And Atari followed that up in 1981 with Asteroids Deluxe. And this thing was, because it was such a simple design and easy to implement on even the cheapest and slowest of microprocessors, it appeared on pretty much everything. If it had an electronic interface with a screen, you could play Asteroids on it. I know there were watches. Every home computer had it. There were dedicated handheld units. You know, it continues to show up in you know, best of packs that are released on various platforms even today. Windows had it. I think probably even Macintosh had a version at one point. So there was, you definitely had the opportunity to play this game if you wanted to, and you didn't have to go to the arcade to do it.
Yes, this is one of those rare, iconic kind of titles that is so pervasive and venerated in like American popular culture. I mean, if there's one or two video games you can talk to your father-in-law about for strategy, like Asteroids is probably on that short list. And like you said, with the amount of money that this thing took in, and let's do a quick the back of the envelope calculation here. Like in 1980, Asteroids machines were accepting 10 million quarters per day, according to Playmeter magazine.
Oh my God.
Now, that's $2.5 million every day that these things are pulling in domestically. If you calculate and adjust for inflation, Asteroids is making $7,219,205 a day in 1980 for the people that invested in it. That speaks volumes. I mean, this is the most popular and highest earning Atari game there ever was. And that's really saying something considering, you know, what that symbol means to so many people who, you know, revere arcade culture and these companies. Like, this is one of the moonshots that's out there, right up there with Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Asteroids. I mean, that's probably the big three, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, wow.
Every time I hear numbers like that, especially when expressed in terms that I can easily understand, like number of quarters put into an arcade machine, I always find myself trying to visualize what that would look like if you took all those quarters and put them somewhere. Would that fill up a football stadium, two football stadiums? I don't know. A house? Who knows?
It would look like a giant pile of coin.
Well, you're probably correct about that.
huge.
Asteroids is, for me, a game that I admire from a distance. I'm terrible at it. It's frustrating. I don't like it when I'm playing it. But I certainly understand its beauty and its appeal. And when somebody fires it up and does well, I love just watching it. It's an amazing experience because it's such a simple thing. And yet I can be as drawn in watching the game in play as other people are when they're playing or when I'm playing a different game. It's, for me, you know, I enjoy watching people who are really great at them play Laserdisc games because it's like watching a cartoon. And this is like watching a complicated ballet, almost like a dance where these asteroids are floating across the field in sequence and in sync, and watching someone move around and destroy them and rack the points up is just blows my mind, because I to this day, and I spent a lot of hours in my youth, not so much this time, but a long time on this cabinet, and was never able to get better at it.
Yeah, I mean, the people that are really adept at asteroids must have, you know, total command over right brain and left brain and just work in symphony. It's part science, part art. There are so many, there's a multiplicity of calculations that you have to be performing all at once and immediately right now. I mean, there's no time to effectively ponder a decision in Asteroids. It is literally by the seat of your pants, sweating palms, grinding your teeth, and just gritting it out. And that's what the magic of it. I mean, it's unequal.
Well, let's talk about those people who did do really well at this for just a second. The initial high score was set on February 6, 1982 by Leo Daniels. It was 40,101,910 points. It was bested on November 13, 1982 by a 15-year-old Scott Safran of Cherry Hill. He scored 41,336,440 points, and then that record stood all the way until 2010. And there was in fact, if you go to YouTube, there is a short, it's about 10 minutes long, a documentary called Locksmith versus Asteroids. And it's a recording of a man named John McAllister trying to beat that record. And, it's a fascinating 10 minutes of film because when it starts out, he'd been playing for 52 hours. And it talks about, like, I'm doing fine. You know, I had a really bad morning on the morning of the third day was just really awful for me. And he said, it's 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning. It just got really awful. And he starts hallucinating, and they're talking about, like, you know, he would go to the bathroom and just lose ships. That's how many ships he racked up. That's how you do that. You go to the bathroom for a couple of minutes, lose 6 to 8 ships, come back, keep playing. So no spoilers, of course, on that documentary, and nothing at all to do with that documentary. But the current high score is 41,338,740 points set by John McAllister. So you figure that out.
Yeah, I think to the delight of absolutely no one, Scott Safran, that 27-year-old record, which was just like the height of Everest. Like, I can't believe that anyone outdid that. I mean, the boy played for 53 hours and 8 minutes. That's a long work week condensed into one game of Asteroids on a single credit. I mean, it destroys the mind and shreds the psyche just to ponder, like, that kind of attention and focus and will. I'm flabbergasted.
Well, they even talk at the end of the video about how he couldn't go any further because he was hallucinating. but then they talk about, like, he took a drug test to show that he wasn't on stimulants or anything to help keep him awake.
Performance enhancing drug, yeah. Like caffeine, I guess. And
well, not, I don't know about caffeine, but, you know, probably they were looking for things like, I don't know, cocaine or something, that whatever keeps you up for 53 hours, to help you do that. So I can barely stay awake for 12 hours at a time these days.
I don't think there's been too many 53-hour cocaine benders since the 70s, but
probably not.
This game did come out in the 70s.
So yeah, it's a fascinating little documentary. Like I said, it takes about 10 minutes. I love to watch this game. I like to watch people play it, and I love that. In addition, you know, to the ships blowing up and the UFO modulating sound when that appears on the screen, there's also that, there's like that heartbeat that, that pumps in the background and it speeds up and really kind of drives the adrenaline. And
yes, the two note asteroid soundtrack.
Right.
Thump thump. Yep. Thump 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 thump. Yep.
The Jaws soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah, it's got to be. There's no way that that wasn't just cribbed from Jaws. There's no way. They deny it, but it's definitely, it's the same mechanic. And it works. I mean, it makes you apprehensive when it speeds up and little white things are zipping all over the place and your retinas get kind of tired from all the phosphor drag. It's that kind of game.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of that. The game Asteroids appears pretty much on every top 10 list of video games ever made. Usually it's number 1, 2, 3, something like that. And
number 1, 2, and
3. Right. Sometimes when you have a great gaming experience, you know, and then you don't play the game for 20 years for whatever reason, you know, either you can't find the cabinet or you just don't have time and you forget, and eventually you go back and play it and you go, God, why did I like this? This is terrible. Asteroids is not a game like that. This is it, because it's such a simple design and can draw you in so easily. It's something that where the experience is just as good as it ever was.
It's that old Atari mantra, simple to learn, difficult to master. Although it's more like egregious to master, but
right.
it's if there's a formula that is expressed for X plus Y over Z equals arcade nirvana. Like, Asteroids is all three of those variables.
Yeah, absolutely. You get an extra ship every 10,000 points. The game gets harder as the number of asteroids increases per level until the score gets to about 40,000 to 60,000. When you lose all your lives, obviously the game ends. There are some bugs, especially in the early revisions of the ROMs. The game will slow down once you start getting to about 50 to 100 lives, just because they didn't build in a limit of the number of lives you could earn, and it would fill up memory, and these little 8-bit processors just couldn't handle that much.
Is that 255 problem they have? Like, when you draw, like, extra men across the screen, I've heard that, you know, 255 is, like, the negative one, I guess, that causes things to crash. Is that what's going on there?
I think so. Yeah, that would make sense to me. I didn't do that much digging into it. Pretty much, Asteroids appears in all kinds of popular pop culture media, movies, television shows, you name it. If it mentions video games, it probably mentions Asteroids. Tell me about the cabinet, Jeff.
Okay, Asteroids exists in three permutations. There's the original upright, there's a cabaret, and there's a cocktail. The upright is basically a lunar lander cabinet that was retrofitted for Asteroids. I don't know if I've heard that the first couple hundred asteroids that were done were actually with lunar lander cabinet side art, because they halted production of Lunar when the incredible demand for Asteroids was being realized. The cabinet itself is about 6 feet tall and has an interesting, like, 40-degree kind of angular profile that kind of approaches the player and kind of demands their attention. There's brilliant little red, white, and blue, very patriotic side art of a blue asteroid field with all the little rings and rocks floating through space and your tiny little white vessel there in the void shooting at them. Brilliant little marquee, the iconic-looking red and yellow Asteroids logo demanding attention. The cabaret is much more understated. It's probably about 4.5 feet tall and has a little triangular chopped top. And they just utilize a miniature version of the marquee, which is on the faceplate above the coin door, and uses, you know, the five white buttons on a very nondescript control panel. The cocktail itself is the standard Atari drab cocktail with the faux wood grain appearance and some, you know, blue stickers in the corners, and the same understated, you know, blank, non-graphic supported control panels. Two-player alternating, it'll invert the screen, and the two players can sit across from one another, as per usual. I think that's it for the arcade versions of it, though.
Okay. Now, we'd mentioned that they made like 70,000 of these cabinets, bunches and bunches of them. Uh-huh. That would seem to suggest that perhaps there are more than a handful of these things still floating around today. Is that the case? Or am I looking at paying $1,500 because they just aren't out there?
No, Asteroids is probably the most ubiquitous game that's out there. I've seen these things go at auction and online from $150 to $400 to $800. Like, I wouldn't say, if you had a complete upright and that wasn't falling apart and the monitor and the boards were there, I wouldn't pay more than $400 for it. Honestly, you can do some serious horse trading and bartering on an Asteroids. They're too easy to find and they're too ordinary to demand top dollars. The cocktails are as commonplace as the uprights. The cabarets are a little more uncommon, but they're so nondescript and uninteresting that I don't know if they command a whole lot of attention. They might even be cheaper, honestly, just because there's not a big cachet for them.
So in other words, if you're looking to start a game collection, cabinets, this is a great one to pick because it's cheap, it's abundant, so you can find them everywhere, and it comes with one of the greatest games ever made in it, ready to play.
Right. Agreed. I have an Asteroids upright.
Jerk.
I didn't want to brag about it, but yeah, there it is. It's like in the 30,000s or so for the serial numbers. I bought it on eBay about 8 years ago, paid $150 for it.
Wow.
And had it shipped out here slowly by rail. And I've put about another $150 into internals and rebuilding the deflection board and whatnot. And it is razor sharp. All told, you know, maybe $400 total. And
nice.
That is in accordance, really, with, you know, the market demand. Like, everyone loves it. They are ubiquitous. They should not command huge amounts of dollars. And regardless of what you hear, vector monitors really aren't that big a pain in the ass. And when they're overhauled and judiciously gone through and everything's working and they function pretty well and they're a lot more reliable than a lot of people would have you believe otherwise. This board set doesn't really tax. The software is really, really pretty firm. It's not scratchy. It doesn't push the monitor or stress the coil or force it to draw to the edge and burn the transistors up or anything. It can run like a top if it's in good shape.
Well, and that probably is at least partially because all the sound is run through discrete hardware circuits. There's no software cycles that are wasted generating sounds. The CPU is sort of, I guess it wouldn't have been too low end for the day. It's a Motorola 6502 at 1.5 megahertz, and then the speaker and the discrete sound circuits. So, fairly simple inside. So if you're not great at electronics or you're concerned about opening up a cabinet and seeing miles and miles of PCBs and wires and all kinds of stuff that you don't know what it is, you're not going to get that if you get one of these cabinets.
Right. This is bare bones. I mean, there's a power transformer in the bottom. There's the AR regulator version 1, which is basically a bottle cap transistor and a couple of resistors. You know, the board itself is probably 2 square feet. There's 3 ROMs on it, you know, a PROM, a 6502. The vector state machine is the magic secret sauce, I guess, in the board itself. It's all in discrete logic circuitry and a lot of like 7400 series logic chips that, you know, draw and determine, you know, where the Asteroids are floating and the physics and the position of everything. And the processor just cues up the VSM and asks it to draw when they should be and apply the correct speed and whatnot. I understand Atari condensed all of this architecture into what was later the AVG, the array for vector generator. which debuted in Space Duel and was used beyond that, but until 1982, they did it all in 7400 series logic, and it takes up acres on the board, but it's pretty straightforward. I mean, an oscilloscope, a soldering iron, and a Saturday night, and you should be able to get it working.
Yep. An ideal machine to pick up for a beginning collector. Not too intimidating, a lot of fun to play and everywhere, and you're not going to spend an arm and a leg trying to get one.
And your friends and your family and your neighbors will love it.
That's right.
This game attracts people. Everyone will understand it. Everyone born in the last 30 years will appreciate it. And, you know, kids and younger ones are fascinated by that phosphor glow that attracted us like moths to a flame those years ago. The magic is still there. I've seen kids just flock to this thing, and it's magnificent. It's still the same siren and coin emptying hungry device it always was.
Something I forgot to mention when we were talking about high scores, bit of a sad note. In 1998, Twin Galaxies Intergalactic scoreboard decided to seek out Scott Safran so that they could congratulate him on his world record back in 1982. They spent 4 years looking for Scott and then found out that he had died in a car accident in 1989. So on that note, we'll talk about another sad thing, my high score. Yay.
Oh, boo.
Yeah. I racked up a whopping 4,430 points. I bet you beat me.
A little. Yeah, a little. 45,410.
Oh, you jerk.
Well, I mean, it's in my garage. I don't just play it this week, you know what I'm saying?
So then I should get a handicap just because you have it and I don't. Is that right?
Sure.
Of 50,000 points?
I'll give you 60. You can have it if you want it.
Okay. All right, so obviously I'm not good at this game, and it's not one that I will be spending a whole lot of time playing in the future, but I will certainly be appreciating it when other people are playing.
I can't recommend playing this game in MAME. You have to experience it in its original state. There's no substitution for this monitor. Those brilliant flashing phosphor blinking bullets and watching all the high-speed objects zip around and leave those phosphor trails, it is intoxicating, and LCD screens do not do this justice. Find one and support it.
Yeah, I gotta say, and that's probably true of all vector games in general, but certainly of this one in particular, it shines on that vector monitor. You really have to play it, and probably your local barcade will have at least one of these.
Yeah, and it's probably even like a multi-asteroids. There's a Braze Technologies kit that if you approach a asteroids in a public space today, if you press the player 1 and 2 buttons simultaneously, you may get a menu where you have three options to play Asteroids, Asteroids Deluxe, or Lunar Lander. A friend of mine in Manassas has this kit installed, and it's pretty neat because Lunar Lander is increasingly difficult to find, although the emulation for Lunar Lander and the thruster device isn't quite there. But it's fun to fire it up every once in a while, and it's neat to make that discovery that these other two hidden games are there. Although they're kind of shadows of themselves, it's an access, a point of access to play and enjoy them.
I agree. All right, Jeff, what are we going to play next week?
It sounds like this, Mike.
All right, well, that was a lot of fun. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And before we move on, this, yes, again, is no vector, and so I thought I'd do a little contest here, give something away. We don't currently have a sponsor anymore, so it won't be anything cool like an X-Arcade, but I don't know, maybe I was thinking some sort of arcade theme movie of your choice from Amazon, or I don't know, I'll come up with something by the time we reach the end of the contest. But the contest is this, to try and figure this one out.
That's awfully narcissistic of ourselves.
Of course it is.
A contest about us.
Yes, because we're awesome and you love us, and even when I rip on your games, and we've been batting a big fat zero on the previous couple of games, by the way. Did you know that, Jeff?
Have we?
Yeah, people did not like that we did not like Horizon, and they did not like that we liked Legend of Mekkai.
There was one dissenter on Horizon that I saw.
I got a couple of private emails about that.
I guess we haven't shown much.
Well, yeah, all I can say is you people have terrible taste. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Dear Atari Anonymous, ever since my husband Luno returned from Earth with Asteroids, the new Atari home video game, he and the rest of the family do nothing but play Asteroids. Luno says Asteroids is good practice for his interplanetary life.
Bitty bitty, bitty bitty.
Tell me, dear Atari Anonymous, with everybody hooked on Asteroids, what on Earth is a poor Martian mother to do?
New Atari Asteroids, now available for your home.